Hi, I'm Kenny.
And this is Monica.
And you're listening to Questioning Faith,
a podcast where we discuss our journey with the Christian faith.
In today's episode, The Depravity of God, we discuss the biblical claims about the goodness of God and whether we really think they hold up.
What I like about this episode is that we really focused on the claims of God's character and who he claims to be in the Bible, as opposed to Christians and their shortcomings or their counter to God actions, which seems to be the focus of like books like God is Not Great.
A lot of claims against Christianity have to do with the evils of the church and the atrocities committed throughout history in the name of God.
Right.
And when I was a Christian, it was easy to kind of write that off as, well, yeah, but those are flawed human beings. They don't really represent the good God.
They're gone astray, or they're not real Christians.
Right. So we wanted to focus on who God is according to the Bible. Who does he claim to be, and who is he represented as in his actions?
Right. Exactly.
So I hope you enjoy the episode.
And let us know what you think.
Well, the reality is, for most of my life, I did believe God was good.
Right. It's pushed into you over and over by the Bible and by the community that you're around. Even I thought God was good, not knowing much about who God was.
Right.
It's part of what you assume God's character to be when you say the word God. It's assumed that he's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the whole arguments from apologists, is that you can't understand good and evil. You can't understand morality if there is no God.
Right.
And so God has to be good. But now, we don't think that. It's not even that we don't believe in God. We both actively think God isn't good.
Right. That we don't think that God exists. And the God depicted in the Bible, even if he did exist, is quite evil.
Right. And from where I'm sitting, not worthy of worship.
No, not at all. And I remember when I was a Christian, one of the things on my list, as I got to know the Bible more, was how the atrocities in the Bible could be perceived as good. One of the things I had written, I think it was in Numbers, God commands Moses to kill this guy for picking up sticks on Sunday. And I thought, well, geez, that seems like a bit of an overreaction. Like, if we saw overseas a group, a cult, or a religion, if they took a guy and stoned him for not honoring a day, like for literally picking up sticks, the rest of the world would think that's horrendous.
Right.
The UN might get involved. It's an atrocity to man. But this is happening a long time ago. But it should be a God with steadfast morals. So it shows that the God is representing the morals of the people of the time.
Yeah.
Even from the get-go, in the story of Genesis, we see God acting counter to how morality lends today.
Right. So today, I think we would argue that the pursuit of knowledge is a good thing.
Right. Even if you reject the outcomes or the conclusions of the knowledge, most people agree that seeking knowledge and seeking all of the information and then forming a conclusion is good.
Right. And the Genesis story supports the opposite.
Right. God is trying to hide knowledge from the people.
Right.
And Satan is trying to let people in on
truths. So God creates Adam and Eve
and
then tells them, you have to obey me. Then he puts in this garden the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That if you eat the fruit of this tree, you gain understanding of good and evil.
Right.
You learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, don't eat it.
Right.
Don't seek the knowledge. The person, the character in the story that encourages seeking knowledge is the one that we're all told to see as the bad guy.
Right. And he's not, to be clear, he's not even saying be evil. He's just saying have knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah. Which, I mean, the argument is, right, the story is about how they disobeyed God, and that's the problem.
Right. They somehow, without sin, disobeyed God.
Right. But how is that a good law to follow, like to give? Like, how is that a good thing to put something in front of them that would give them knowledge and then say, don't take it?
Right.
And then say, and if you disobey me, you die.
Right. Weird punishment to a weird crime.
Yep. So even from the start of the Bible,
it just seems like humans explaining, like any other legend and any other myth, it's like humans explaining why snakes don't have legs, the evilness of the snake, why women have to give birth, why men have to work the sand. Like, it's just kind of trying to explain the surroundings, like any
like Native mythology. American
folklore, like all of it.
Right.
It fits in perfectly with all the other stories of explaining our surroundings.
Right. So that brings us to kind of our question for today's episode.
Right.
Which is, why don't we believe that the God of the Bible, the Christian God, is good?
By any definition of the term, really.
Right. I think most people understand, when you say good, people have a general understanding of what good means.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, we could go down like a philosophical tangent of defining good, defining evil. But most people, we understand good, we understand bad. And so, why isn't God good?
Right.
And to start with, throughout the Old Testament.
Those were my first seeking questions. When I really started studying the Bible, the, for lack of a better word, atrocities over and over that are committed.
Yeah. I mean, the God of the Old Testament is a genocidal maniac.
Really?
Almost. I don't know if almost is even needed there, right?
There's a kill count on YouTube of how many people God kills, and it's 2.5 million. They're more exact.
Just in the Bible.
Right. And those are the named ones. So they don't include, like, Noah's Ark, because
there's no number given.
There's no number. So it's more than that. Those are named kills by God.
Yeah. Versus, like, 3 from Satan?
It's 10 from Satan for Job's family. But even within Job, God takes credit for those murders. So yeah. I'm not sure it's fair to give credit to Satan on that one. But yes, it's 10 for Satan and 2.5 million deaths for God.
Yeah. Like you said, that's a YouTube video. Just search God versus Satan kill count.
Yeah.
And it'll come up.
The ominous music.
Yeah.
But for me, studying the Bible and seeing things like in 1 Samuel, when God tells Saul to kill a whole city, man, woman, and child, children included. And that's in Jericho as well. Kill man, woman, and child.
And livestock over and over.
Those are not isolated events. And I, same thing.
Right. The reason God gives in like 1 Samuel 15, the Saul story, is he orders Saul, the king of Israel, to go and attack Amalek, another people. And he says his reason is because Amalek opposed Israel. Because Israel was invading.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, go and kill all of them.
Right.
Just kill everyone.
To kill everyone.
That opposition happened some 40 years earlier.
Right.
A lot of the people weren't even involved in the decision.
Right. How dare you defend your land?
Right. Or how dare you be born to people who defended their land?
Right. Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's absurd to claim that as good. But when you start, like I did, like most people do, when you start with this supposition that God is good, you find ways to make that good.
Right. Instead of seeing how horrendous it is and letting yourself feel the horror of that time period and what people were doing to each other, you say, well, how was this good for God? It was God working out his plan.
Right.
And you'd think, well, it's free will taken over. And so it's just the evilness of man. Of course, there were children being murdered too, but it's the evilness of man that caused God into these actions.
Right.
But that's not even accurate, because you can look at Egypt and God is hardening Pharaoh's heart.
Right.
Actively working against free will to harden Pharaoh against letting the people go so that he can kill all the firstborn, all those babies and adults too. All the firstborn were murdered after God hardens his heart. And that happens again in Deuteronomy. King Sihon, God commands the Israelites to kill women, men, and kids after he hardens Sihon's heart against letting the people pass through his land so that God can kill them. It's pretty explicit why God hardens his heart. He just wants to kill them.
Right. It's God showing his might, showing his power that, look, I delivered this land into your hands, Israelites. I'm giving you this land and I will wipe out all of your enemies.
Right.
And apparently he's the one who makes them enemies.
Mm-hmm.
He hardens hearts. Right. In the first chapter of Nahum, this prophet makes these declarations about God. The Lord is a jealous and avenging God. The Lord is avenging and wrathful. The Lord takes vengeance on his adversaries and keeps wrath for his enemies. His wrath is poured out like fire, and the rocks are broken into pieces by him. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those who take refuge in him, but with an overflowing flood, he will make a complete end of the adversaries and will pursue his enemies into darkness.
It just sounds so much like Lord Voldemort in Harry Potter. He kills those who don't serve him, but he rewards those who serve faithfully.
Yeah.
And Crucio to all of those
who rebel.
Who rebel. Yeah. You're going to be tortured forever.
Right.
Yeah.
Who won't, you know, take the dark mark, who won't
submit to his authority. Like, you're going to be punished. And those who serve will be rewarded.
Right. And it's amazing to me now that I believe some of this stuff.
It is amazing to me now, too. And I try to reflect back on how I made it make sense. And it all came back to assuming that God was good and starting with that presupposition. And right. then saying, well, this was good somehow. These people deserved it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
These babies who were murdered deserved it somehow. And I hate that I subscribed to that now.
Yeah, well, and like some of this stuff, even within Christianity, jealousy, wrath, vengeance, being self-serving,
mm-hmm.
we see all of those things as bad qualities in people. We discourage people from being any of those things. Mm-hmm. And when we see somebody doing that, we reprimand them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when God does it in the Bible, when God is jealous, when God is wrathful, when God is taking out vengeance on his enemies, we call that good?
Yeah, I guess there was a mindset of this is his creation. He can do with it what he wants.
Right.
You know, it was whatever God does is good. And so he can torture, maim, humiliate
mm-hmm.
whoever he wants. And now I see that as such backward logic. Like, we don't say if we create something that we can torture it. Like, let's say scientists come up with a way where we can create life. Like, I can create a snail and I can start life. That doesn't mean I get to torture it. Right. Into insanity.
Yeah, there's this idea that we owe God everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite books, actually, Frankenstein, argues the opposite.
Mm.
Dr. Frankenstein brought a new life into the world and then subjected it to hatred and rejection. And what that did is it turned him into the monster that he thought that he was.
Right.
That Dr. Frankenstein thought he had made.
Mm-hmm.
And what would have better served the creature and Frankenstein would be for Frankenstein then, after creating it, to nurture it.
Yeah, treat it with some respect.
Teach it. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Instead of worship me, serve me obediently, or I'm going to make you eat your children.
Right.
Which is an actual quote from the Old Testament.
Yes. Yeah. Or love me, serve me, adore me, or I'll make you starve.
Yeah, these horrible things are going to happen to you if you don't
I'll destroy serve all me. Your crops.
Right. Yeah, no rain.
I'll raise up this other people to come and attack you and destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bring Babylon down upon you and carry away all of you into exile where your children won't know their homes.
Right. We only see that kind of language in real life from authoritarian regimes and dictators. Worship me with everything that you have or I'm going to make life hell for you.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the character of God throughout the Old Testament.
Yes.
And then even really into the New Testament.
Yeah. So the objection that I would have given 5 years ago to mm-hmm. this line of logic is, okay, well, but Jesus.
Right. It's different now. God has put out a new covenant. The immorality of the Old Testament, we don't have to think about it anymore. The atrocities this old God created doesn't matter anymore because even though it's the same God, he's acting differently now.
Right. Or, you know, all of that was meant to lead to Jesus anyway. Like, it was this grand plan.
So for some reason it's forgivable.
It's God's plan to rescue the world, to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
God so loved the world that he gave his only son, right? But even so, I think I would argue it gets worse with Jesus.
Right.
For a couple of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not just love me or die, love me or starve, love me or get taken away into captivity.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's love me or be tortured for all of eternity.
Right.
How is that good? How is that even love?
Right. Because certainly that would be an abusive relationship.
Like right. If I said to you, you love me or I'm going to torture you.
Right.
That's not love.
No. For some reason before, I would have said, well, you just don't understand how better God is to everybody else. Like, his nature is just that far superior. But now it seems like, well, if his nature and his intelligence and his goodness is that much greater, then it seems he should have that much more love and tolerance and forgiveness. Like, for example, with the dogs, I'm more intelligent than our dogs. That doesn't mean when they mess up, I get to beat them forever. Even if God's nature is better than ours, infinitely more than that. Instead of, well, you loved somebody else. You didn't acknowledge me as your God. So you have to be tortured. Even if you did good things throughout your life, you didn't acknowledge me as the one that created you. So right. You're going to be damned.
Mm-hmm. That raises the next question, I suppose, of what does it mean to be just? What is real justice?
Right. Yeah. Who deserves hell and why?
Yeah.
I would be hard pressed to say that even a Hitler or Stalin should go to hell.
At least.
Maybe.
I would be hard pressed to say that they deserve eternal punishment.
Eternal, right. Because it would be cool to think about them in hell maybe 100 years per person they killed.
Right.
That sounds satisfying.
Right.
But even then, it's a blink of an eye
compared
of how
eternity.
Long it's going
to
keep going.
Right.
Like, I think of hell now as the Cruciatus curse, like I mentioned earlier. And so I'm just imagining that going on forever.
Yeah. Even if I were to grant that for mass murderers, that's not most people.
Right.
So if we're talking about a fair punishment, then how is eternal damnation fair to someone who just didn't believe in the right thing?
Like Gandhi, selfless life, spends his time serving others, respecting others.
Right. Everything that would fit into the Christian ethic.
Right. He's in hell forever.
Because he believed the wrong thing.
Because he believed in the wrong God. Whereas to take a murderer, a serial murderer, and there have been a few who go to prison and then they find God. And maybe some of them are faking it, but you can't believe all of them are faking it because no one's beyond redemption, right? Like, that's the whole Christian mindset. So some of them authentically turn to Jesus in their dying breath. Okay, they're in heaven. They spent their whole life torturing and killing, and they get to go to heaven for eternity. That does not feel like justice.
Right.
That feels evil. The deciding factor is thought crimes.
Right.
And from a perspective of God, it's because of, like you quoted in Nahum, that jealous nature.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to be worshipped and adored. As a teacher, I have some students that very much dislike me. And I wouldn't have thought, oh, I'm going to treat them badly for it. It doesn't matter to me at all if they like me or don't like me. Hopefully they learn. Hopefully they do good with their lives. It didn't affect my day at all if they liked me or not. And I don't know why it would matter to a God if people like him or not, if he's truly good and just and intelligent. And you could say, well, God doesn't want people to go to hell, but he allows it nonetheless. If I was in control, I would not let somebody like Gandhi go to hell for the mere crime of not believing in me. Like, who cares if he believes in me?
Right.
What matters to me is that you did a good job. You had a good life.
Right. And even if you didn't have a good, you didn't lead a good life, even if you didn't do a good job, I can't justify eternity in hell for you.
Yeah, even to that point, though, why make the punishment for sin death? Like, God is setting all of these rules, and he jumps to the most extreme.
Right.
Your punishment for eating a fruit is death. Your punishment for eating an apple is that children are going to get cancered for thousands of years and be raped. That's the fall of man, your punishment for eating an apple. Like, it seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why not the punishment of sin be according to what sin it was?
Right. I guess that comes down to what is the purpose of punishment, right? Is it to correct behavior, or is it to satisfy the desires of the rulemaker?
Right.
The authority.
Yeah, punishment for me has always been to try to correct the behavior to improve it for next time, like to try to guide them not to exact some sort of vengeance.
Right. But we've already discovered God is vengeful.
Right.
So I don't think that God's goal is to correct behavior. Well, that's not fair. In Amos, he tells Israel, I starved you. I gave you cleanness of teeth. I starved you and you didn't return to me.
Oh, right. All of the punishments.
I gave you drought. You didn't return to me. I gave you blight and mildew. You still didn't return to me.
Right.
I sent you pestilence, plagues. You still didn't return to me. I killed your sons.
Mm-hmm.
You still didn't return. Like, so I suppose.
Yeah, his goal was to coerce them into allegiance.
Right.
I wondered there for a while when I started to question the faith if Jesus' sacrifice was good or even that impressive.
Yeah, like, it's common knowledge. Soldiers jump on grenades for their companions.
Right. People die for other people all the time. And if you think about it, like, from Jesus' perspective, assuming that there's a God and this whole thing is real, he knew he was going to be resurrected and with God in 3 days.
Right. The death wasn't final.
Right. And so I cannot think of a mother that wouldn't have gone through that death for just their own kid, much less you're going to be saving billions of people's lives if you do this act.
Right.
And you're assured that there's life after, then I think most people would probably do it, but maybe that's a stretch. A lot of people at least would do it.
Right. There are people who are willing to pay a price to help other people.
Right.
To suffer some kind of loss to help other people. And so it stands to reason that at least Jesus isn't alone in being the only person that would make that sacrifice.
Right. But that's still to say he would be good for doing it. Because I would say that the people who are willing to die that death are good for doing it.
Sure. Absolutely.
But it's just not as impressive as I thought it was at one point.
Yeah. To go along with that, it's also not as impressive in a different sense. So the idea is God so loved the world that he gave his only son to save them all. Right. That it is God's desire that the whole world would be saved.
Oh, right.
And we've done the math.
And it's hard to do. Like, you have to use estimates.
And we try, in doing this math, we try to be generous with the numbers. But we did the math on this rescue mission.
Right.
From God. And we went to a few different websites. We'll put the links on our website in our show notes. But we found a few different websites that had estimates about, first of all, the world population. Total. The number of humans
Who have ever lived
on the planet Earth up till today.
Which turns out to be about 108 billion.
Yeah. And then we found out how many people have claimed to be Christian. And these, again, these are estimates. How many Christians have there been since Jesus, since the first century?
Mm-hmm.
And we added in approximately how many Jews
lived before the time of Jesus.
Lived before Jesus.
And that was the harder number to come up with, but we felt like we were generous in them.
Right.
And we add them up, and that it comes to about 4 billion Jews and Christians that you end up with total.
Right.
And so that is 4%. That's 4% of humanity that Jesus potentially saved. And I did this before, and we got closer to 12%. But I think I used a different total population for the world based on creationist theory that the world is only 10,000 years old.
Yeah.
So even if that was accurate.
That's 12% of the population has been saved. The 4%, that's
right.
Even worse, right? I would argue that that's probably more accurate, but let's go with the 12%. Jesus, God of the universe, goes on a rescue mission, and his return is 12%.
Me as a teacher, if I had a 12% return for a star test, I would be fired immediately, probably.
Yeah, like that's not success.
Mm-mm. What we calculated today, the 4% return, that means that there are 103 billion people in hell. And 4 billion people in heaven-ish.
Right. And those numbers only increase every day.
Right. For every one person you have going to heaven, you have a lot more going to hell.
Right.
Because 31% of the world is Christian, so that leaves 69% of people going to hell.
That's not impressive.
No, it's not a good rescue mission.
And I would say, this is reminiscent of something Christopher Hitchens said, an all-knowing God would know how to run a successful rescue mission.
Right. Well, he creates us all, so he knows what it's going to take to convince us that he's real. And he doesn't. So he's either hiding himself from us or playing with us.
Right. Or he is incompetent and doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
Either way.
Or doesn't exist completely, which is obviously what we think. That
right.
It's not really a real story.
Right, right.
And that all of this is pretend.
But whichever way, the numbers, the data suggests that God isn't good.
No, that most people are in hell.
Suffering for all eternity.
For thought crimes. Even if they lived a life helping others and serving others.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's moral. And one of the claims that I get from people who say...
From Christian apologists...
is that you can't have good morality without God.
Right.
But I don't see how this God is moral anyway.
Right.
And I think there's superior morality away from God. Like when you consider the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, this is a fun thought experiment.
Right, because a lot of people point to the Ten Commandments as morality, as the baseline for morality that we build upon.
Right. We hear the uproar whenever people want to remove the Ten Commandments from our courthouses.
Right.
Or you hear people say the United States is a Christian nation, that our laws are based on God's law. Our laws are based on the Ten Commandments kinds of things. So let's think about the Ten Commandments. And here's a little thought experiment that we did the other day, and it's, if you were going to rule the world, or if you did rule the world, what would your Ten Commandments be?
Right. If you could set 10 rules that everybody had to live by, then what would your 10 rules be? And if we look at the 10 commandments as given to Moses from God, the first three, really the first four,
right,
seem like a waste of space. You've got no other gods. Well, me personally, I don't care if you love somebody else more than me.
Right.
Like, why is that one of my big rule? I mean, it's not going to be one of the big rules. Two, you shall not make idols. Again, that's basically the same thing. Three, you shouldn't take the Lord's name in vain.
Right. You can't use God to justify your actions if God didn't really give you that.
Well, that's fair. And remember the Sabbath. So you've got all four of those that are just kind of a waste of space.
Right. If you're trying to make a good moral world,
right,
those aren't accomplishing any of that.
Right. They're not pertaining to how we treat each other or moving forward with respect.
Right. And then the last six.
And then you've got honor your mother and father, which arguably could be good. But it's more about respecting everyone, not just your parents. You shall not murder and you shall not steal. Those are good things.
Right.
Committing adultery. It's a good thing to not commit adultery.
Right.
But then you shall not covet. That's a weird one.
Yeah, don't be jealous of other people.
Even though God's jealous.
Even though God's jealous, yeah. Yeah.
And you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, which is good not to lie.
Right.
So some of them are reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, the last six, they do pertain to the way people treat each other. And for the most part, would promote good living. However, I feel like there's some stuff that's left out that I would argue is far more important than coveting.
Right.
Or is far more important than adultery.
Right. Even the order is a little bit out of whack. Like, my number one would have been don't murder.
Right. Yeah, so what would our 10 commandments be?
For sure, I'd start off with don't murder. And then my number two would be no rape.
Yeah, I think those...
That would solve a lot of problems.
Certainly should be at the top of this list.
Right.
Don't kill people. Don't rape people.
Slavery should be on the list.
Right.
You shalt not own people.
You'd think that a good God would support that.
Right. Cannot permit slavery.
Yeah. And then in a similar line, but I think it covers more nuance, next would be don't exploit the less powerful for personal gain.
Mm-hmm.
Don't exploit the weak for your own personal gain.
Right.
I think we would all agree that that's...
morally bankrupt.
Yeah. And then I would follow that up with don't engage in non-consensual violence. Meaning, like, okay, so if you want to, like, have, like, some sport or...
football game.
Whatever.
Karate.
Right. Okay, great.
Non-consensual violence.
But non-consensual violence.
Right.
Like, don't hurt people to hurt people. And then we put in don't steal.
Yeah, that's a good one. We can keep that from the original list. Yeah. And then not discriminating based on... race, sex, sexual orientation, or any other inherent attributes.
Right.
Just say that's not allowed from the get-go.
Yeah, and then...
we thought it would be good to
include
some positive things, to what you should do, not just all what you shouldn't do.
Right. So our last three are all positives, and we went with seek to remain open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Strive to promote the general well-being of others,
mm-hmm.
which we think kind of covers...
The adultery
and the coveting and lying.
Right.
And then finally, take responsibility for your own actions.
Right. Which that kind of lends me to bounce back to the justice of it all, because is the morality of a scapegoat even a good mindset? Like, in the Old Testament, they slaughtered animals to cover their sins. One of these poor animals that were murdered because of the sins of man. And that seems horrific. And
yeah.
Then even now, to displace your responsibility upon a human sacrifice or a human God sacrifice, whatever you want to call it, is immoral. You should take responsibility for your own action.
Right. Even if we have a situation where someone commits a crime against somebody else, somebody murders somebody, and they're going to go to prison for life, or they're going to get the death penalty if it's a death penalty state, and the victim or the victim's family says, no, I'm going to take his place. We would definitely say, okay, that's very gracious of you. That's a very kind thing to do.
Right.
And that's impressive.
Right.
That a person would want to do that.
That level of forgiveness.
But we wouldn't call that just.
No.
And...
we wouldn't allow it within our legal system.
Right. And for a person to accept that, for a person to say, yeah, okay, do take my place.
Yeah.
We wouldn't applaud that as a good thing.
No.
As something that is deserving of getting to go to heaven.
Right. This scapegoat mentality is, in and of itself, a primitive way of thinking about justice.
Right, yeah. It goes back to blood sacrifices.
Right.
And really, when it comes down to it, Christianity is still participating in an ancient ritual blood sacrifice.
Right.
No, they're not currently sacrificing animals or people, but every Sunday, at least in the Catholic Church, every Sunday, right, you are eating the body and blood of the sacrificial lamb.
In the Evangelical Church, you're pretending to eat.
Right.
The body and blood of the sacrificial lamb.
Right.
So it's all about the human God sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about this ritualistic, ancient tradition.
Right. And as a Christian, I looked at all of these other ancient religions that had those kinds of animal or human sacrifices with disdain.
Right. It was, for some reason, when I was in the faith, I was able to see my own as righteous and good, but others as sick and mm-hmm. barbaric.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a religion now, and they believe that they're absolved of their evils and their sins by killing a goat and hanging it and letting the blood drip out, we would think that's horrendous.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we accept it with the Old Testament as okay. And I think it's because in our minds, we think it was so long ago. People were different then.
Well, that's part of it.
And that's fair, but the God is supposed to be consistent.
Right. And then we also would have said, God ordered that. And right. God is good.
Right. And so you that have is the right to start thing to with the presupposition that God is good to make all of it make sense.
Yeah.
And so why do you think we believe that God was good?
Well, for me, it was, I would argue, indoctrination.
Right. It was.
I was told my entire life, God is good. The Bible verses that were focused on throughout my life were the verses that claimed God is good and he does good.
Right.
God works all things towards good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. I was told over and over and over again that God is good. The Bible claims over and over and over again that God is good.
Right.
And so a combination of being told that over and over again, being told that the Bible is true over and over again, and then being presented with this blood sacrifice story as one that is good for me.
Right.
Because I was then also told, you are evil.
Mm-hmm.
You are depraved. You are deserving of eternal punishment.
Right.
But this God has made a way for you not to have to go through that.
It's a very backwards way of thinking about it. And we certainly aren't perfect beings, so we make mistakes. And a lot of people are straight evil that commit horrible atrocities. But to presuppose that everybody is nothing but evil all the time and can do no good without God
mm-hmm.
is archaic. And I believed God was good, like you. The Bible said so. But at the end of it, it came down to, is somebody good because of what they claim? Like, God says he's good over and over and over in the Bible, but what does he do? What are his actions?
Yeah.
And his actions have shown more of his character than what his words claim to be.
Right. So even if the Christian God was proven to be real, I can't see that God as good or worthy of worship right. from anyone.
Right.
Final questions?
One of my questions would be then, what would your Ten Commandments be if you got to impose them upon the public?
Nice. I like that one. I would ask for anyone who does worship a God of any kind, why do you think your God is good?
And then if you don't subscribe to a God, why do you think God is not good?
Or do you think that God, by definition, the all-knowing, all-powerful God, does that God have to be, by definition, good? Because not all religions claim that about their gods.
Right, that's true.
Okay, so to recap, those questions were,
what would your Ten Commandments be if you got to give them to the world?
If you believe in a God, why do you think that God is good?
Or why don't you think a religion's God is good?
And finally, does God, by definition, have to be good? Thanks for listening to Questioning Faith.
We hope you guys enjoyed it.
If you have any thoughts or questions, you can reach us at kennyandmonicaaskquestions@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Our next episode will drop on November 18th. And it'll be our last episode of the year, so we can prepare some more content for you for next year. But until then, remember,
always ask questions.